Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Joining us right now, the manager of some of my favorite Mets teams ever. I've got such great memories of the 99, 2000, even the 2001. Obviously, we know what happened there, Mets. And that's Bobby Valentine, who's got a new book out, Valentine's Way, My Adventures, Life, and Times. He's in studio with us. We'd love to see him. Bobby, good morning. How are you?
Gio, good. Boomer, good. Great to be with you guys.
Bobby, great to see you. I asked you when you came in this morning, okay, let's get right to the Mets. Billy Epler, good signing for them as a GM?
Good signing. Good guy. Knows the ropes. You know, he and Brian were sidekicks for quite a while there when I was managing, and he learned the ropes. I think he's going to hit the road running, and he knows the lay of the land. He's had the one good experience, and it became a bad experience in California. That's a learning experience, and I think that'll help him here in New York.
Do you think what took the Mets so long to get to him?
Well, you know, I think it's the process now that you have to call, you have to get permission, you have to make sure that the person you're talking to is going to get a level up in their job. And a lot of these teams don't give permission. Yeah. You know, I remember one time way back, if I can go, Tommy Lasorda called the Mets to ask permission to talk to me to be his first base coach. Frank Cashin at the time says, I can't grant you the permission because we've already offered him the job to be our first base coach. The fact is, he didn't offer it until after Lasorda called and turned down the request. So, you know, that's been going on for years.
What about Billy Epler's time in Anaheim? All that talent, and they didn't have a winning record. A lot of Mets fans see that as a red flag. What's your take on that?
Well, I think he got thrown into a pretty tough situation, you know, with the best player in baseball and an owner who wanted to spend money, but there wasn't a great market for pitching, and they're still looking for pitching out there. You know, they have, Trout and Ohtani and others, and the team is still lacking of pitching. So I think, again, experience is a great teacher, and Billy's a great guy. And now that he has experience, I think that he's going to be just the right guy for the job.
We're talking to Bobby Valentine. He's in here with Valentine's Way, a new book that he wrote. Talking about Billy Epler coming here. Look, he's a New York guy. He understands the market, which I think is really important, and really good friends with David Stearns, who sounds like, if you really put two and two together, that he's going to end up taking Sandy's job next year when he leaves the Milwaukee Brewers. Do you think that's a leap of faith, or do you think that's something that really could happen?
Oh, I think a lot of things are out there in the winds. And, Billy's made a lot of friends in the game, and David's one of them. And I think he'll make friends here as soon as he gets to town. There's a lot of crazy stuff going out there in baseball, and this is not the best time to be in a new organization, you know, with the new CBA coming up. And
what do you think? We're going to see a lockout.
The winds are blowing.
Do you feel like we're going to see a lockout?
It smells like a lockout.
And how long do you think that goes for?
Well, you know, the players are going to have to be tested once again and find out just what kind of fortitude they have. And if the union's as strong as it always was, I think we'll have a long walkout.
Wow.
But that's a big if.
It's the last thing that this league needs.
What a terrible time. I mean, it's really never a good time for a lockout, but like this is like, come on, for crying out loud. Anyway, we're talking to Bobby Valentine. The manager, of course, is the next thing that's probably going to happen with Mets. You know, it's an interesting time in baseball for managers because there's the one school of thought where it has to be an extension of the general manager, same type of thinking, analytics. But then we just saw Tony La Russa come back and have a lot of success as manager. You see Alex Cora, who is not a guy who gets told what to do, have success with the Red Sox. You see Dusty Baker, for crying out loud, go back to the World Series. So what type of manager should the Mets go out and hire?
Whoa, That's a heck of a question. I was with Tony La Russa the other night at Joe Torre's Safe at Home Foundation dinner. I was talking to him about the new world of baseball. And, you know, I think that the GM and the manager have to get along, and the manager has to understand the new world that's out there. And in our market, not only you have to do it, but I think you have to talk it. You know, the press now wants to be analytical. They want to, you know, ask the question of, you know, if it's 42% of the time the guy was going to score from first base with two outs with the wind blowing in, why didn't you put up somebody who could hit through the wind that was blowing in, you know? Right. So Billy, again, is that guy. He's not old. He's not young. He'll attach himself to someone that I think will work in tandem with him.
He'll certainly adapt. You have to adapt or you can't survive anymore.
That's the world.
And that's the way the league goes. And so how much of the lineup is made by a collaborative effort between the manager, the general manager, and the analytics geeks in the front office? How much is that, you know, going into every game?
You know, a lot of it now. You know, and the manager needs that help, you know. I was always criticized, and Gio is probably one of them that criticized me for using too many lineups. I mean, that was my whole thing. Holy cow, he used over 100 lineups. Yeah. What the hell's he doing? And I used the stats in those days to try to do matchups, not only with the starting pitcher, but with the bullpen, you know, to figure out how I'm going to be okay with my lineup and my bench when that reliever came in. Did you
have the support, though, from the front office to do that, or were you doing that mainly with you and your coaching staff?
It is now branched into departmental situations. You know, one guy's in charge of the left-handed pitchers who throw curveballs, and one's in charge of the fastballs that rise. And you have to have a cooperative effort. You know, the training room is very important. Boom, as you well know, you know, the training room used to kind of hide the situations from the manager. Oh, he can play, and they'd get him out there with tape and whatever the heck to put someone out of the field. Now the training room is, well, we better give him another day. Maybe it's time for him to have that rest day. Maybe, you know, we have to apply a different methodology here. So the training room, the coaches, the statistics, the front office, I think talking with Dusty, who, you know, has gone through that Houston situation, which is very analytical. Yep. He said, you know, you get a lot of information. And when you get all that information, then you have to make the decisions. And the decision of the lineup, I think, is cooperative. And I think the decisions during a game is still resting upon the shoulders of the manager.
When I think about your era as Mets manager and the success that you had, I think about guys that, and no knock on them, they weren't the most talented players in baseball, but you got the most out of them. Example, Benny Agbayani, Jay Payton, Darrell Hamilton, Timo Perez. Even Edgardo Alfonso, I really think, took off when you were manager there and became one of the best players and best hitters in Mets history, in my opinion. Was that an analytical approach that you had at that point, or you're just managing the crap out of these guys old school to squeeze out the most out of them?
I wish it was a magic wand. No, a lot of it was matchups. But believe it or not, I mean, there were matchup situations when, you know, when I would bat Benny leadoff, and people said, what are you doing batting him leadoff? I said, well, he'll hit a home run if they throw it down the middle, and he'll take a walk if they don't. And, you know, they said, well, what is that? What good is that? He's not going to be able to steal a base. But there were numbers that really helped making out the lineups, and that's why there were so many of them.
Yeah. I mean, I also think about the, you know, some of these guys, Bobby Jones and the one hitter at the that team. This is why I love that team so much, because, I mean, obviously Piazza was there, and we know he's a big superstar. But there were so many of these role players that you felt were overachieving. That's why he was so damn likable at the time, and that's why I always loved you as a manager, because I felt like you were squeezing the most out of the roster, where I feel like ever since we're not, I mean, guys are underachieving. Like, I don't have that feeling.
Yeah, but that was also still an era where, you know, if you got into a guy's face, he wasn't going to cower and go yell at his agent. Yeah, agent wasn't going to go do something on social media where all of a sudden you hurt a player's feelings. I mean, like today, forget it. You can't hurt a guy's feelings now, because now you take a look Well, we use an extreme example. It would be Ben Simmons, the basketball player in the 76ers, where his agent is now coming out and saying that he has mental health problems because the team is not helping him. They gave him a $177 million contract. I would think that would help him. but for some reason, now all of a sudden, you got to treat everybody with kid's gloves. Could you – look, you were at the – towards the end, maybe there was a little social media, and there was obviously a lot of radio. There was a lot of print media. But nowadays, man, everybody that's got an opinion has got a place to put it.
Yes.
I don't know how these managers and players even deal with it these days.
You know, I don't think you deal with it much. You stay away from it is what I – the guys tell me they do. They just don't touch it. Joe Maddon last night was at the Clear Smith dinner over at the Hunt and Fish Club. And, you know, he likes to kind of stay away, even though you think that Joe's the guy who's doing it all. You know, he's making T-shirts and has great slogans and everything. But from what I gather, you just don't get that involved.
You know, he goes to a lot of dinners.
I know.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of charity stuff going
out there. Now, listen, let me ask you a question. Your foray into politics.
Oh, boy.
I mean, my God.
Why did
you want to do that? Yes. And yeah. I know you're very popular up at Stanford, and there was probably all this little figaziness going on somewhere along the line. Who knows? You lost to a much younger candidate. She seems like she's got all the chops to be a good mayor, it sounds like. I've read a lot of stuff about her and everything. What was that like for you and the nail biter that turned out to be?
Another great experience, Boone. Just, you know, 8 months ago, I decided that because this young lady was primarying our existing mayor, who had been there for 7 years, going on a third term, served the city for 35 years. I said, geez, if the own party is primarying him, there must be something wrong. And if there's something wrong, maybe I can make it right. So, you know, I did an unaffiliated candidacy, built it from scratch, which was a wonderful experience, figuring out how to get volunteers together and money together and office and headquarters together. And we actually ran a 6-month perfectly clean campaign, not a negative word mentioned the entire time. Got 14,000 votes, more than any non-Democrat ever got in our city, and almost won that thing. And I'm glad that I was the candidate, and I'm also glad that I'm not the mayor because you know, it's really a tough job. And I got 4 years of my life back when the votes came in.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's Stanford's a mid-sized city. I mean, it's a lot of people that live there, but it's a lot of issues going on, right? Just like every other city has. Just wonder why a guy like, you know, you're doing so well at Sacred Heart, things are going well and all that other stuff. Like, all of a sudden, I'm going to make this turn. And
can't stay still, Bobby Val. That's what this book is about.
A little bit,
right?
Of a 7-year itch. Yeah, you know, like I did 7 years in Texas, 7 years in New York, 7 years in Japan, 7 months in Boston, you know, and now I did 7 years at Sacred Heart. So, yeah, it's all about the sevens. Mickey Mantle is my favorite player.
Well, there you go. I mean, but my God, to get involved in a political campaign.
Yeah, well, like you said, I think there was a little bit of relief that you didn't end up winning the election. And you were out there grinding. We had a caller call up and said, I saw Bobby Valentine outside of a coffee shop with a sign.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 7:30 in the morning, you know, in front of the highways. I had my signs. Signs, you know, we had over 1,400 lawn signs. And this thing about signs in a political campaign, it gives new meaning to sign stealing. Because all of a sudden there were 800 signs up. We had 14 out. We had to put another 600 out, you know. So it was a real learning experience, that's for sure.
Did you call George W. Bush for advice on the campaign?
Actually, George W. sent a nice check, and a nice note. And
sent a $500 check.
$500 check. And it made the news every time, just to make sure that was the news.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Is he the most famous person in your phone? Has to be, right? Former president?
Ooh, yeah, I think he's the most famous person and one of the really good guys, too.
How about the last president? Is he in your phone?
He's not in my phone, but, you know, he wound up in the campaign.
Somehow.
Yeah, we had a photo taken together in 2000 through the World Series, right? And so the last day of the campaign, all around the neighborhoods, picture of Donald and Bobby with the with the quote, "Only poor people and dumb people pay taxes." That really helped with the minority vote in my town. I'll tell you that one.
Wow. That's why you didn't need this in your life, man. You didn't need this stress. I mean, my goodness.
Dirty tricks, man. Yeah. Did you see a lot of dirty tricks coming your way or no?
Yeah.
I guess there were some dirty tricks. I actually thought it was a reasonably clean.
Yeah.
It didn't get too obnoxious.
No, but not totally honest. You know, that's one of the things that just got weird, you know, the way where there were actual facts out there from 10 years ago and they just ignored the facts and, said
well,
and printed whatever.
That is politics.
But that happens.
Yeah, who could lie the best, I guess.
Right, exactly. If you could go back and relive 1 year as a manager, what would it be and what team?
Wow, probably 99. Yeah. I just loved that team so much. You know, and it ended in that heartbreaking fashion in Atlanta after we were down 3-0 and then came back and went extra innings. And everybody knows that Kenny Rogers and Andre Jones. But just that team was so much fun to be around. They were doing all the defenses in the infield, you know, perfectly. Everyone bought into the idea that we were building a real good team and a real good franchise. Johnny Olerud was special person on the team, you know, and Ray and that whole group, you know, Mike there coming into his own, Al and, you know, Hampton. That was a very, very good group of guys and a very good, talented team.
Of course. I think 2000 ended up going to the World Series, losing to the Yankees, but was the 99 team better, do you think?
Oh, I'm not good at that best and better stuff, but they were more fun, I think.
Yeah.
More fun to be around. They liked each other a little more than the 2000, even though the 2000 team was special.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
The 99 team had a lot more fun attached to it.
Sure, yeah.
It seemed like it was just
loose. It was a mojo rising, that whole thing, Rob Ventura
looser.
And that. I mean, that was just tremendous. God, bring me back to that.
Come on.
I'm crying out
Let's
loud.
Let's do it again.
You know? I mean, I know it wasn't a championship associated with that, but that was like the time. I mean, that was the era for me growing up. I remember, do you remember the June 30th, 2000 against the Braves, the 10-run inning and fireworks night? That was like Piazza hit the home run. Everybody went crazy. I got so many memories of that time.
How could there have been a 10-run inning against the right?
Against the Braves?
Unheard of.
I mean, and then Alfonso with the single to tie it, and then Mike with the home run and the fist.
Do you think there's something to be said about what Sandy Alderson said about coming to New York, about how New York could be an impediment to maybe getting some people and attracting them to come here?
I think that it's a little more of a challenge. It's the same game, as you well know, but there's more of it. You know, there's more attention given. There's more interviews given. Each guy becomes a major part of the scene, you know, and some guys get lost in the merry-go-round.
Right.
It's getting spinning too fast for him.
I think like Matt Harvey got lost in a merry-go-round.
Right.
Yet Jacob deGrom is able to stay on it and really has turned out to be just a tremendous, tremendous pitcher. When you see him pitch, hopefully he is healthy coming back. Have you heard anything about him?
Heard that he's healthy, and I heard, you know, he's a special athlete. He's one of those guys, right?
He's one of the guys that nobody really even thinks about, but yet he goes out there every time and almost like you're expecting a no-hitter every time he goes on the mound.
Yeah, and he's fun to watch. He throws it where he wants to. He competes with every pitch and every batter, which is really cool. I think today's a day they have to decide on Syndergaard, too, isn't it?
Well, I think they've already offered him.
They offered him, but he has to decide, right?
Yeah,
whether he's going to accept that.
I would take the 18.5.
That's a nice number.
It's a nice number.
2 years.
Is somebody else going to give him like a 3-year deal for twice that or three times that? I don't think so.
No, I think he's going to want to sign for 1 year, prove he's healthy, and then be the Zach and be the Jacob, big contract guy.
He's a little bit of a meathead. He is a little bit interesting guy.
A little different.
Right. You know, you would think that they would learn from Jacob deGrom and how to go about your business.
It's hard to do it the way he does it. I mean, he is so clean. And you know, I hear he doesn't do the major workout regiment, you know, he's not one of those, I have to eat chicken at 6:30 in every morning. He just goes out, he does his thing, he competes, he says what's proper what's on his mind, but what's proper.
Is Greg Maddux a good comparison to him?
Wow. Except for, you know, Jacob has better stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, yeah. I always felt like Greg Maddux was one of those guys kind of under the radar, but he was in Atlanta. So what kind of trouble are you going to get in Atlanta?
He was a little grating, though, on his teammates, wasn't he? Wasn't he a little tough to handle?
He probably Maddux? Well,
he was a little different.
Too. Yeah, right.
I don't know. I just kind of felt
people like Jake.
They're both surgeons on the mound, is what I was kind of getting to.
Yes.
Both right handers, both kind of quiet, weren't really. Yeah. Didn't seem to me like try to stick out above their teammates.
Quiet assassins.
Yeah.
Just go out and blow the other team up. Yeah.
Now, you have on here on Valentine's Way on the cover, you got Los Angeles, Arlington, Japan, New York, Stamford, Santo Domingo. You left off Boston there.
That was like the last stop in the book. Yeah. But again, it was only 7 months.
Sure,
so
it didn't get
the name tag.
It bothered me that you became the scapegoat up there. The players were the problem. You weren't the problem, right?
I don't know if there's a problem. I was a bit of a problem. I got there late. You know, it's kind of like what Billy's doing right now. You know, playing catch up in Major League Baseball is tough. I got hired after this. I got hired about December, in the middle of December, you know, and getting hired now with the GM meetings just passed and trying to put the team together and bringing a manager on now, it's getting late to really hit the ground running the way you're supposed to. I was behind the entire time I was in Boston, I felt. I never got caught up.
Yeah, but it was one of those things where it felt like, all right, this is Bobby Valentine had no control of these guys. And I thought that was ridiculous. Someone who had rooted for a team that had a ton of success under you, I didn't like that narrative that was spun of Bobby didn't have control of these guys. Bobby didn't know what he was doing. I was like, bull crap, Bobby knows what he's doing. Of course he knows what he's doing.
I actually thought when you took that job, I thought you took it reluctantly. I didn't feel like when I heard you, you know, got the job and everything, I didn't feel like you just went in head first, maybe because it was late and maybe they didn't make you feel like you were the first pick or whatever. It just didn't feel right to me.
Yeah, it was one of those Frank Sinatra moments, you know, regrets I have a few.
Yeah.
It was late, you know. Matter of fact, I accepted that job, and it's in the book. It's kind of interesting. I was over in Japan revisiting with a lot of the players that I won a championship with. We were out to dinner. In Japan, when you're out to dinner, you also have a beer or two, huh?
Yeah, a little sake, maybe.
Yeah, they're a little sake, too,
right,
huh?
Exactly.
And the phone rang, and it was Ben. He needed an answer in, like, 20 minutes, or they're going to accept a job. And it was interesting.
But you knew that you were up for the job.
Yeah, right? I interviewed. Yes. I went into Hartford, a little clandestine room, in a little room in Hartford, Connecticut. They came down, met me halfway, had a little interview again. Interesting, it's in the book, but part of the interview process, which Billy better not do with his manager, was that I got shown some tape of the games the year before when the general manager was asking me, what would I do if this situation came up? Well, the games that I was shown, I happened to do on ESPN, but the volume was down. I'm watching the game. I know what's going to happen. He paused it. And he said, well, what would you do here? And I said, well, I'd guard the line a little more here because there's a chance of hitting down the line.
That's great.
And then the ball went over the bag, you know, but that was the interview. What are you going to do?
Wow.
I wasn't in control of it.
So you're telling me you were out at a dinner in Japan drunk when you accepted
the job. I wasn't real drunk. I was drunk afterwards.
Another dinner together.
Yeah, right. Another dinner
all the time, man. That's why we went into politics. Dinner and cocktail parties.
Right. Well, Valentine's Way, just in time for Christmas. If you've got a Mets fan in your life, you got a baseball fan in your life, this is a book. And Bobby Valentine, there's few people as interesting as Bobby Valentine out there, from the Mets days to the Rangers days to the Chiba Latte Marines.
Wow, you got it right. Yeah,
I mean, I tell you, this guy is a very, very interesting dude and a great guy, and we love having you in here.
Bobby, great to see you, man, and good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Merry
love
Christmas
you
to you, man. Boom. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.